excited and we're very honored to have a very wonderful musician come here to play for us for our last night. His name is David Rovix.
Casey was a good boy. He treated people well. His mama loved him. Anyone could tell. She'd send him off to school, pack his lunch with care, and when he came back home, she hugged him with her fingers in his hair. Cindy, she loved Casey, and when all is said and done, she is every mother, and he was every mother's son. But Casey was a little old. He spent his time each week in that church in Vacaville, in the service of the meek, in the service of his city, in the service of the Lord, with his mama in the pews, all the time they could afford. If their love alone could save us, then the world would be one. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son. People thought the priesthood was where he'd someday be, so some folks were surprised when he joined the army. The recruiter told him he didn't have to fight. Cindy hoped this was the case and prayed for him every night. That was before they sent him to the desert with a gun. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son. His truck had no armor, and when it came under fire, it and half the soldiers in it became a funeral pyre. Cindy, she was sleeping the moment Casey died, and she knew she'd never see him standing by her side. There was no consolation, no safe place she could run. She was every mother, and he was every mother's son. The president, he told her, he died for a noble cause. Now Cindy's wondering exactly what that was, 'cause they never found the weapons. And now that Casey's gone, it seems that oil is the game, and Casey's the pawn. Cindy's got some questions, yes, and so does everyone. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, as always. The song that we heard leading into the show today is a song that one of my guests for today's edition of the Soapbox wrote about me in the summer of 2005 when I first occupied Crawford, Texas at Camp Casey. He's a dear friend of mine, David Rovix, and we'll be talking to David about his song honoring Palestinian hunger striker Kader Adnan after we speak to our first guest, actor, comedian, and progressive activist Roseanne Barr. Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, Roseanne. It's nice to talk to you again.
It's nice to talk to you, too. Thank you for having me.
Well, we'll try not to strain your voice too much. I know you've got some of that icky stuff that's been going around. But I really wanted you on today's show because we started the Soapbox 3 weeks ago and we've had 3 men in a row. And I thought we needed to inject some matriotism into the show. So I thought you were the best matriot for our purposes of bringing in the, you know, female perspective.
Well, I love that you're using the term matriot. My friend made that up, and now I'm totally blank on what his name is. I just remember Rick, but he gave that to me when he made up that name. Oh, my God, I can't believe I can't remember his name, but I can't remember anybody's name.
I've actually written a lot about matriotism, but I think it's a good concept where you don't love people just based on the borders that you were accidentally born on. Mm-hmm. You know, a true matriot loves all people regardless of their their national origin, race, religion, or, you know, income status.
That's right, and also a true matriot, in my opinion, wants to bring Nemesis to this planet and works towards that end, which you do, and I hope I do as well.
And you don't have to be a woman to be a matriot, of course. Like everybody
no,
I have on my show,
no.
Right. Everybody I have on my show are working towards that, you know, regardless of their gender. So the thing that I want to talk to you about mm-hmm. mostly is that you filed papers to run for the nomination for president for the Green Party.
I just got endorsed by Normal, so that's fantastic, especially here in California.
That is fantastic.
Isn't it great that where all the dispensaries and the whole subject is under attack by, you know, the Obama administration? So that's very important to me that, you know, we get a little bit of pushback here on that subject.
Well, absolutely. Why don't you talk a little bit about that subject? It is very important.
Well, you know, it's just time, and a majority of Americans agree, and this is also one of the foundations of my entire platform, is the legalization of marijuana and hemp. Because, first of all, it will allow, if we can grow hemp, in fact, that a lot of people argue that that's one of the things that built a middle class in this country in the first place way back when. And
uh-huh.
I think, you know, if we can do that, it will allow us to make fuel, food, clothing, and shelter for pennies. And you know, it's a great solution. It's a great crop. It's a, you know, and marijuana, of course, is something not too different, a little bit different. But, you know, the whole war on drugs, which is just a huge farce and a failure in this country, seems to just keep targeting marijuana smokers, and it's just a crime. It's just, it makes me furious, and it's just, you know, it's got to go. And so, you know, the majority of American citizens are pro the legalization of marijuana, especially for medical marijuana, and I want to run on that, especially in California, because we can't lose the right to our medication. It's just disgusting. Who would target sick people who are actually helped with an herbal medication? What kind of sick minds do that? It's just like, what? Is this the United States of pharma now, that our entire mm-hmm. army is coming against the citizens who smoke marijuana, taking their property, putting them in prison? That's what it's about. We are supposed to live in compliance with big pharma so we can get off of our herbal medication and get on their Xanax. It's just, everything is upside down and backward. You know that, Cindy, and we've got to stop it somewhere, and this is a great place to stop it.
Well, just that whole issue and just what you brought up in these few minutes brings up so many other issues, like, A, how dare the federal government come into our state and try to overturn what the people of California voted for,
absolutely,
medicinal cannabis, and B, the overcrowding of our prison industrial complex here in California and the privatization of those prisons. I had Tommy Chong on a couple years ago talking about his, you know, experience with that. But something I think that is more interesting to me as a matriot is that, you know, you said that the big pharma would rather have us on their Xanax or, you know, their other drugs, when Whitney Houston just died. And we
yeah.
see that if she had been using, well, she might have been using, you know, this herbal medication, but she died from prescription drug abuse, I understand.
Well, you know, the way they're talking about her today, and I just read kind of an update on that, is the woman was cross-medicating, and she was on everything that you can imagine because she had a bigger problem than drugs. And you know, so I don't think that she's a good example to use in this case. But I do tell you what: a lot of people who are on chemotherapy, a lot of people who have glaucoma, a lot of people who have PTSD and other emotional things that they're dealing with are greatly helped by medical marijuana. The science is in, there's no doubt. But, you know, I think the thing that I want to say, Cindy, and I know you and I have talked about this before, is that it's like one river with a lot of tributaries, and, you know, it goes back to, like, the same six guys that run everything. Pharma gets a payoff when they bury their toxic waste next to a school in a poor neighborhood. They get a payoff when they do that. They get a payoff when everybody gets cancer and they go for the cancer treatment. They get a payoff for that. They get a payoff for chemotherapy. They get a payoff when everybody's on their drugs. This is the kind of, like, insanity that they have devised for the American people and called it our government, when in fact it is not in any way. It is irrelevant to the majority of taxpaying citizens. Our government has become irrelevant in every possible way. It's a predatory system that just keeps giving itself payoffs off the suffering of people, and we have to stop it.
Well, absolutely, and that's one of the reasons you're running for president. So,
but you're right about the prison military-industrial complex, because now what they do is they take taxpayer money. They take these huge, wherever they find a big pile of money, that's where they go and break it up and put it in private pockets. That's exactly what's happening. It has been happening since Reagan was elected. So, you know, this is taxpayer money stolen by private, you know, by people that are, like, walking up to it. And it just makes me sick that at those tables where they divide the public monies and apportion it for various causes, there's no poor people sitting at that table, anywhere near that table. But yet the poorer people under $250,000 are the ones who are paying to support that system. It's such an upside-down pyramid that it can't hold. And I want to represent the taxpayers and the people in this country also who, you know, maybe can't afford to pay taxes, who make less than $250K per year. And that is so unheard of. And that's why Bill Maher and all these lefties or fake lefties or whatever they are, liberals,
yeah,
call my campaign a joke, because it is a joke to them that anybody would speak on behalf of 99% of the American people. It's a joke to them.
Well, to speak authentically for these people, because you see even people like Rick Santorum and what's the other guy, Romney, talking like they represent the 99%.
Well, you know, it's all a scam, and everybody knows it's a scam. The Romney family, talk about getting a payoff when people die, and, you know, peasant insurance, and then when they get cancer. The Romney family sits atop of that heap of garbage, and, it just makes me sick. It's just so stupid. The stupidity of it is what really makes me mad. The stupidity of a system that would actually create jobs for half of the people, which consists of holding a gun on the other half who are in prison. How long do people think that it is so stupid? How long do they think that that's going to last in our country? How long can our country go on toward that goal? Not too long. I mean, seriously, if you're pro-America or pro-justice in any way, pro-working people, you've got to take a look at it. You've got to stop being bought off and, distracted. Because the fact of it is that this war on drugs is how fascism took a big hold in our country, and it's the number one issue, and it needs to be rolled back. It really, really does.
Well, thank you for that, for talking about that issue. It's so important to me and to, like you said, it's like one of the number one issues. What do you think about Ron Paul? Because, you know, you got mad at me on Twitter because I said that you were my Ron Paul, not that you're like Ron Paul. It was like,
his
followers are crazy. His followers, attack anybody who's not for him. But I just meant to say that I have the same fervor for you as Ron Paul's followers have for him. But he's also talking about doing away with the drug war, and I think that's why he has a lot of young people supporting him.
It is absolutely right. That is why a lot of people, young people, are supporting him, and they're doing so to their own peril. And he's another reason why I decided to run, because I can't let him sling that BS anymore, you know, because his he's like a broken clock right twice a day. But the fact is that his solutions to getting to that goal, you know, which I'm also for getting rid of the Fed and legalization and all those good things, his solutions to doing that are disgusting. And I just want to say that to all the people who are misled by him. The fact that he says that government should do nothing, excuse me, they already have done nothing, and that's why we got into this mess, because they have done nothing by way of regulation and nothing by way of making any common sense that represents the actual people of this country, the workers of this country, the taxpayers of this country. I mean, that guy, his solution is no solution at all. It's just more of that free market, unfettered capitalist BS, and to your peril, Do the young people of America support that guy. Come over to my side, check it out, read the platform. There's nothing wrong with efficient government, Mr. Ron Paul. There is nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with efficient government. Thank you.
I would love to see a debate between Roseanne Barr and Ron Paul. But Roseanne, how can people check your platform out?
Well, you know, I'm running on the Green Party, and they can check out the Green Party platform, which, you know, I'd have to say I'm about 85% in agreement with. I'm for regulations, and I'm not, you know, I'm somewhere in the middle. I started my own party called the Green Tea Party because I like and am very encouraged by the synthesis between OWS and the Tea Party, and I mean the pre-Palin Tea Party, where they actually made some sense. But, yes. You know, a nice synthesis down the middle between all factions in America that, like, lead to a common-sense solution to the benefit of most and not anymore to the benefit of a few at the expense of the many. And, you know, I guess I pretty well laid it out. Boy, I get really fired up. Cindy, I want to tell you one thing. You are such an inspiration to me, and, you know, watching your campaign and supporting it when you ran also. You
did very well.
You are just an inspiration, a great American, a great human being, and, you know, I'm so happy to talk to you. And you're so smart is what I like so much. And so many women like us of our age group, boy, they're getting smarter all the time, and I just would love to encourage them, as I know you would, to continue to read and inform yourself. Stop saying, oh, I don't like anything with politics. Well, believe me, politics likes you, and politics owns you. So you better get out there and inform yourself so that you can actually do something to support your children and your grandchildren, because we cannot let these people get away with this kind of crap much longer. We can't, Cindy, and you know that.
Oh, absolutely, and it's exciting because young people are involved. But, you know, we also, there's a lot of wisdom out there available everywhere, that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time we start a
right.
new movement. So
we
you're going
to
be running, You're going
to
be running for president, and you have a new series coming up. Do you
want
to talk about
that a
little bit?
I mean, I can't really say anything. I have a nice chance to film a nice pilot, and they liked my script, and, you know, it's about something, I'll say that. It's about the economic times that we're living in and what actual people do to survive those times. And the fact is that what American people and people everywhere are doing to survive harsh times and austerity, that crap, is, you know, they pull together. They help each other. They seek common sense and cheap, efficient solutions, and the human mind is totally you know, able to do that once you get these interlopers out of the way that are all lobbyists and enriching themselves on public money and also enriching themselves on not solving problems. And when you put problem solvers in the middle, you get problems solved. And so, you know, I and my boyfriend, Johnny, I'm sure you met him, Cindy.
Yes, uh-huh.
With Michael Moore and all that stuff. Well, we just wanted to put it down, you know, in a little bit of a, you know, fable tale for television, and so that's what we've done. And we have some nice characters in there, and we'll see if you know, NBC is brave enough to air the show. And I certainly hope they are.
Well, we wish you the best luck. And I know that you've been under the weather, and your voice is sounding like that. So thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. And you do have a website, right?
Yes, I do. It's RoseanneWorld.com, and there's also a website, Roseanne for President. So,
well, I'm on your side, and anything that we can do, I can do to help you, you just let us know, and we hope you feel better, and send you our best wishes and everything you're doing right now.
And my best wishes to you, fellow and sister matriots.
Thank you. We should form the Matriots Party.
I know. We've talked about, like, a new, you know, I think we need to just continue till we get at least three parties, and we should have way more choices than two in this country.
Well, absolutely. Everybody says, indeed, do you support third parties? And I said, well, it'd be nice if we had two oppositions and parties in this country. You know, what do you want to skip a number? It's like we're the old Soviet, you know, Politburo or something. We just have the illusion of a choice and the illusion of democracy. But you certainly do give us a choice, people who really, it's just all common sense, like you said.
Well, one thing I liked about technology, and I'll end with this because I know you've got to move on, but, you know, one thing that was so great, remember all that Y2K stuff and the fact that they had discovered in technology that there was something between yes and no. There was a third thing. That thing was not yes and not no, and that is a completely different state of mind an evolved state of the human mind state itself, because there is something in between the two choices, and it's to choose neither of them and to build something that works.
And works for us, for once, the 99%. Thank you so much, Roseanne Barr. Okay, talk to you soon, That was our guest, Roseanne Barr. See, I told you she's smart, and I know that you know that because you listened to the show and she's been on before. Before we talk to David Rovics, I want to play his song, Honoring Kader Adnan. So here's Ode to Kader.
Kader Adnan grew up near Jenin City. You could say he was a product of his time. Ever since he was a kid, he'd get arrested. Though he was never charged with any crime. Spending half his life in prison, a life lived like so many of his friends. Arbitrary and indefinite detention, never knowing if your jail time would end. Kader Adnan was arrested last December. Again, he wasn't told the reason why. He was shackled, he was beaten, he was tortured. There beneath the Middle Eastern sky, perhaps there was a moment when he realized that right then, with his body, he'd say no. But from then on, he refused to eat another meal. Like in Belfast, not many years ago. Kader Adnan grew up in a war zone. But all the tanks and planes were only on one side. It was a type of war that they call occupation. Settlement, removal, fratricide. And anyone who talked about resistance, who thought they did not deserve to be a slave, would be looking down the barrel of a gun, and often find themselves inside an early grave. loves his wife and children, and he likes to eat his daily bread. But in prison, he can't see his daughters or live life with the lady that he wed. So on behalf of all the children without fathers, he decided he had to strike a blow. He said, I will have dignity or death, like in Belfast not many years ago. Each time Qadr Adnan was arrested, in prison he would learn a little more. And soon he became the teacher, and he talked about the times that came before. They talked about civil disobedience, they talked about the ballot and the gun, they talked about the occupied six counties and the H blocks in 1981. Qadr Adnan talked of perseverance and how someday their people might be free, how someday they might hear their children laughing unafraid, how someday things could be. And then at 3:30 on one morning, the soldiers came, their rifles pointed low, and they took Qadr Adnan from his family, like in Belfast not many years ago. They say Qadr Adnan is a terrorist, just like they said of Bobby Sands, because he dares speak out against injustice, because he dares to make a stand, because he dares believe that he is human, and he does not deserve to live this way, because he dares to consider an alternative, because he dares to imagine a new day. Lost his liberty before he was born. To fight for life, it's death he must embrace. But like others come before him, there are others who take his place. And even the great powers can lose interest in supporting such a vicious status quo, because you can't break a man who won't be broken, like in Belfast not many years ago. Like in Belfast not many years ago.
Our next guest is my good friend David Rovitz. David and I have literally been in the combat zone together at such places as the G20 protest in Pittsburgh, and we've known each other since 2005, before I went to Crawford, Texas. David Rovitz grew up in a family of classical musicians in Wilton, Connecticut, and became a fan of populist regimes early on. By the early 90s, he was a full-time busker in the Boston subways, and by the mid-90s, he was traveling the world as a professional flat-picking rabble-rouser. These days, David lives with his family in Portland, Oregon, and tours regularly on four continents, playing for audiences large and small, at cafes, pubs, universities, churches, union halls, and protest rallies. He has shared the stage with a veritable list of who's who of the left, including me, your host, Cindy Sheehan, in 24 countries, and has had his music featured on Democracy Now!, BBC, Al Jazeera, and other networks. His essays are published regularly in Counterpunch and elsewhere, and the 200-plus songs he has, he makes available for free on the web, and have been downloaded more than a million times. He will make you laugh. He will make you cry. He will make the revolution irresistible. David Rovitz, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy.
Oh, it's so nice to finally have you on the show. I know I've wanted you on the show for a long, long time.
Yeah, you know, it's something I've been hoping for ever since you started the show. And finally, I can say I've been on Cindy's show. So now
I can't.
Feel much better.
Well, you know, it's just like I see you often and not often enough, but it's just really, really nice to get you finally on the soapbox. And you know, David, I tease you a lot when I go to your shows that I should bring a notebook and take notes, because you actually put a lot of information into your melodies and your songs. And, you know, all your songs, most of your songs are for a cause or for some kind of, you know, a purpose. It's not, they're not just like, you know, whatever. But anyway, recently we have a case of a political prisoner in Israel, Kader Adnan, who was on a hunger strike, and you wrote a song honoring him and honoring his activism. And we had some good news that he gave up his hunger strike, but we hear that he is still very, very seriously ill. Can you talk about his case and about the song that you wrote honoring him?
Well, I mean, Kader Adnan, of course, he was on hunger strike for 66 days, and so he's very, you know, he could die any minute. Sorry. He could die any minute. Yes, if your children do.
I just
thought
during
there's
during
two
my
adults
whole...
making sure they don't come in, but they both come in.
My whole interview with Roseanne Barr and my grandchildren were screaming.
So oh, no.
This is a family friendly. It's a family
great,
friendly
yeah.
show.
This is DIY radio, folks. No insulated studio in the middle of some city or something, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Kader he was on hunger strike for 66 days, which is quite a bit longer than many people in terms of survival. You know, so
right.
A lot of people die much sooner than that. So all his organs are at a risk of failure right now. So he could die any minute, regardless of stopping the hunger strike. But yeah, there was a lot of international mobilization, at least over the course of the last week, especially to. Publicize his case, and I think it really put pressure on Israel and exposed their policy of administrative detention, which is, a crazy policy of just being able to detain anybody without trial indefinitely. And as the Israeli politicians want to point out right away, if anybody asks them about that, they'll say, "Oh, you do the same thing in the U.S. and that's supposed to be a justification for
right.
policy being somehow democratic." But of course, it's a completely undemocratic, policy of military occupation. Of course, it's military courts. If they get to see a judge at all, if they're from the West Bank or Gaza, it's going to be a military judge. And in so many of the cases, they're never given any kind of a trial. They can just hold them for 6 months, and then they can sign the papers again for another 6 months and just keep them indefinitely. Some people have been in for as long as 5 years with no trial, no accusations or anything. And Kader Adnan had been arrested, I think, 10 times until 9 times before this last arrest, and each time he was held for at least 6 months. And now he's, so this last time he just apparently had enough and said, "Okay, I'm not going to eat until you let me out."
Well, in all the corporate media I read about him, it calls him jihadist, Kader Adnan. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, he's supposedly a spokesman for Islamic Jihad. And, the thing is that, of course, it's all a matter of how you view reality. But I would say that the vast majority of people in the world, the way they view the reality in Israel, is that Israel is illegally occupying the West Bank and Gaza, and of course whether their occupation of the rest of Israel is legal or illegal is to some extent a matter of question for sure, but certainly under international law the occupation of West Bank and Gaza is illegal, and the settlements they're building are illegal. Kicking people out of their land, not letting them come back if they leave the country for more than 6 months, all these kinds of policies, administrative detention, so many of the things that Israel is doing every day in the process of their occupation of the West Bank and Gaza is flagrantly illegal under international law, and also most obviously immoral and wrong. So basically under international law, resistance of whether armed or or peaceful resistance to occupation is a human right.
Right.
And, you know, so nothing that Islamic Jihad or Hamas is, or any other group in the West Bank or Gaza is, has done to try to resist the occupation is you know, that's all justified. You know, I mean, of course, people can argue about tactics and their morality and their effectiveness, but armed resistance to an armed occupation is justified and completely legal. So the illegal party here is the Israeli occupation. But of course, from an Israeli perspective or from an American mainstream, you know, government perspective, of course, anybody resisting Israel's occupation is a jihadist, a Muslim terrorist, an Islamist terrorist, you know, a thug, whatever else they want to say, you know, an anti-Semite, you know, whatever they want to throw at him. You know, but nobody would have said these things of the resistance under Nazi-occupied France or something like that.
Right.
You know, they're heroes there. You know, mm-hmm. Even whether their resistance has religious motivations or not, nobody cares. They're heroic. They're resisting an occupation. You know, but that's a different story.
Well, we don't have that much time today, but I found something significant. Maybe it's not significant, but I read that Qatar is from Jenin or somewhere close to Jenin, and I know you wrote a song about that. Do you think that has significance to his political activism?
Absolutely, because, I mean, he's 34 years old, I believe, so that means that his entire adult life has been in the context of some of the most vicious chapters of the Israeli occupation. His entire adult life is post 1987. So his adult life began right around the time anyway of the. He would have been a kid, right? So he entirely grew up in the context of occupation and resistance to it in the first and second intifada. You know, his entire life he has seen olive groves being bulldozed in the area around his home. He's seen settlements expanded, and he's seen especially in 2002, he's seen the city that he grew up in a low, you know, suburb of Jenin, and he's seen the main city, you know, where he grew up in Jenin, you know, largely bulldozed by the Israelis with many scores of people killed. And so he's, you know, that's been his life, you know, so, and certainly some of the worst violence of the Israelis in the West Bank has been in the area where he grew up and by no coincidence, some of the most, the biggest numbers of fighters against the Israeli occupation have come from his area. You know, I mean Gaza as well, but if they're from the West Bank, they're quite likely from his area.
Well, David, thank you so much for you know, your commitment to human rights and to peace. And you are a traveling troubadour. So, where can my listeners find out more information about you? And you know, I just think that everybody in our sphere of influence has heard of you and loves you. But more and more people are being turned on to your music and your activism every time you write something, if it's about Occupy or about Qatar Adnan or, you know, whatever you're doing. So where can my listeners find out more information about your music and about your travels if you're going to be in an area close? I know we're going to cross paths again in Ireland, so hopefully we can hook up there when we're both there. What's your website, David?
DavidRovics.com, and they can see where I'm touring in Europe and North America after that, and download lots of free music and videos and everything else like that. And I hope I can see where you're going on your website too, because I got to find you in Europe. There, you're going to be in the same places.
I try to keep everything updated, you know, on my website and my blog.
Right.
And first, I have to find out where I'm going to be. I usually just go. I usually get in the car or on the airplane and go where people take me, as you well know. So, David, thank you so much. And we will have links to your website on my website, and I'll be sending out the YouTubes of all the songs that we're going to play on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox today of yours. And it's so nice to talk to you.
Yeah, great talking to you.
Well, that was our wonderful guest, David Rovix. And I'd like to, as always, thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, my guest, the fabulous Roseanne Barr, Matriot Supreme, David Rovix, who's another Matriot, and you, as always, for listening. And to close out the show, we're going to play my favorite David Rovix song called the St. Patrick's Day Battalion. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week. This is Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Give me a T.
T.
Give me an R.
R.
Give me an E.
E.
Give me an A.
A.
Give me an S.
S.
Give me an O.
O.
Give me an N.
N.
What's that spell?
Treason.
What's that spell?
Treason.
One more time.
Treason.
You're all going to get arrested. My name is John Riley. I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland. It was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go. Enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. And it was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. And there amidst all these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We marched neath the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin Gobra, bright with the harp and the shamrock and Libertad para Mexicana. Just 50 years after Wolf Tone, 5,000 miles away, the Yanks called us a legion of strangers, and they can talk as they may. But from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We fought them in Matamoros, where their volunteers were raping the nuns. In Monterrey and Cerro Gordo, we fought on as Ireland's sons. We were the red-headed fighters for freedom amidst these brown-skinned women and men. Side by side we fought against tyranny, and I dare say we'd do it again. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. Five major battles. Churubusco was the last. Overwhelmed by the cannons from Boston, we fell after each mortar blast. Most of us died on that hillside, in the service of the Mexican state. So far from our occupied homeland, we were heroes and victims of fate. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side.